Hello, Grizz fans. That was Lainey Lou and the Bird Dogs playing us in. I'm Luke.
I'm Mike.
And I'm Brent.
He's Brent.
I'm back.
Again.
Guess who's back, back again.
I thought you said we weren't doing rap lyrics this time.
Mike's not doing rap lyrics. I'm going off the hook.
We got a cease and desist from the representatives of Mac Miller.
I thought it was John Legend.
Well, sure, John Legend, whoever you want. You got to be impressed I got that right. Anyway, but speaking of legends in their own right, we're lucky enough that Brent has agreed to join us on this pod.
Yeah, happy to be here and happy to be back and a regular contributor.
Name a more dynamic trio.
Oh, boy.
You're struggling.
We'll make this a Twitter question later.
So, I understand that you guys are going to Butte.
Indeed we are.
We are indeed going to Butte. We're looking forward to it.
I wish I was going to Butte.
Where would you stay if you were going to Butte?
I would stay at the Hotel Finland. Do you know why?
Because they sponsor our show.
That's like the 10th best reason why I would stay at the Hotel Finland. The Hotel Finland is this awesome hotel in Uptown Butte. Following the trends throughout Butte, they have really been renovating and sprucing the place up. It looks so cool. And I think if I had a choice to stay in Butte, I would pick the Hotel Finland.
All right. It's finlen.com, finlen.com.
I saw that the Montana Tech is playing Southern Oregon University, the Raiders, for their homecoming on October 27th. If you're in the neck of the woods.
is there a Grizz home game on October 27th?
There isn't.
There isn't. Hey, everybody go to Butte.
I think they're going to retire. It's the Kyle Carter Appreciation Week, too. They're going to retire old 57. If you're in the neck, if you're mountain biking, you're birding, catch a Tech game.
And stay at Hotel Finland.
And stay at the Hotel Finland.
And get a drink at the Smooth Hopperator in the bar.
Yes, the Cavalier Lounge.
Yeah.
It's got the only one in the world, the Smooth Hopperator.
And you would know that if you've been listening to us for a couple weeks now.
Stay at the Hotel Finland. It's a no-brainer.
All right. Do you think that by the end of the season, you're not going to want to put a D on the end of that? It's Hotel Finland. FINLEN.com.
Finland.
Finland. And with that, let's get to the show.
So, we had a Grizz game. We went all the way to
Macomb, Illinois.
Macomb, that's where it's at. Macomb. Yeah. And the Grizz had some ups and some downs.
Well, I think obviously if you're listening to this pod, you know they lost. So ultimately that's what matters. Wins and losses.
Wait,
and they lost.
Spoiler, right?
Spoiler alert. I was gonna build up to this one. It was so dramatic.
Oh, boy.
So the Grizz traveled to Macomb and catch the loss. The game started out in a very strange way.
So, yeah, interestingly enough, the three of us last year went to the Grizz road game at Weber State and started out similar, like really quickly down by more than one score. But this game, Western Illinois, they in their first three offensive plays threw two touchdown passes and had over 100 yards of offense.
It seems like they had a plan coming into the game. They hucked the ball deep off of play-action passes and caught our safeties, caught our secondary, kind of on their heels a little bit.
Yeah, what do you think, Brent? They clearly did.
Yeah, I mean, you saw it early, and then I think you saw a little bit of the counterpunch where the safeties would drop back a little bit further, but then they would just kind of attack the holes in the zone because you would see that throughout the game. I think the receiver, what's his last name, Brunner, what did he finish with? Over 150, 175 yards, couple touchdowns. I mean, he caught those first two.
It was ridiculous. Right out
the gate. So they definitely had a plan for the defense, and it made it work pretty much throughout the game.
Yeah, John Brunner was his name. 7 catches, 180 yards, and 2 touchdowns.
Oof.
Yikes. So 2 minutes and 35 seconds in or something like that, down 14-0.
And you've lost your tight end for the game.
Yeah, because what happened on the Grizz first possession is Colin Bingham caught a pass, got hit, fumbled. Didn't look good, didn't come back in the game, I don't think.
No, they showed a quick shot of him on the sideline. He was out of the pads and shoulder wrapped up, so not a good sign.
Ugh, don't like to see that.
Yeah.
backups. Deming is a backup, and Hill, right?
Hill and Rensvold as well, too. Yeah. So you saw kind of a mix of the three of them. I think Deming had a handful of catches in the game, and good blocking tight end, and seemed to be kind of guy that he's not a Colin Bingham, but he definitely stepped up and did a little bit for us.
So how did the Grizz answer?
Malik Flowers finally broke one, which is awesome. Took back a kickoff return. How many yards was it? Doesn't matter. It was a long one, which was great. 95 yards. Great to see. First kickoff return by Grizz since 2013, Ellis Henderson. You remember how fun Ellis Henderson was to watch return kicks, by the way?
He was a blast,
Flowers kind of has that a little bit, I think.
Redshirt freshman. That's exciting.
Yeah. He's just one of this ridiculous depth of wide receiver talent this team has. Because in my mind, he's talented enough that on most Big Sky teams, he would be in their five-man receiver rotation somewhere. I'm not saying he's a starter right off the bat, but he doesn't sniff the field at receiver, so thank God he can return kicks.
Yeah, I mean, he showed that speed. He got right through it. I mean, it was well blocked, but then once he was out, he was gone. But he's done this before, too, just not all the way.
So very quickly, we've struck back, and it's 14-7.
Yep.
And I all of a sudden feel better.
Well, what's interesting is, and that's why I brought up Weber State last year. We were on the sidelines for that game. We watched it, kind of walked up and down the sidelines with the team. In the entire first half, you could feel maybe them inching like closer to kind of put something together to get back in, but they never quite got there. What I really was impressed with, honestly, in the first quarter was that's about as bad as you can start a game, right?
Yeah.
And they kind of, once Flowers scored that touchdown, they kind of said, all right, got to put it behind us, got to keep going. And by halftime, they were winning.
Yeah, and I think that Weber State game, before you knew it, it was 31-0 in the second quarter. I mean, that's how bad it got away.
Yep.
Now, it's tough to say, you know, all things equal, would that have happened again here if we didn't have the coaching change and the system changes and everything? It's tough to totally say. But, I mean, we saw what happened last year versus this year where they responded, the defense buckled down. They held Western Illinois to just, I think, a field goal after that.
Yep.
In the first half.
Yep.
And then the offense got it going. And a little bit on the ground even, too. There was a couple of run plays, which was weird.
Yeah.
That surprised the heck out of me was seeing us bust off some runs longer than 5 yards. In fact, longer than 10 yards. It was exciting. And I think you mentioned it in your Egris write-up, Brent, that was a point of optimism to take away from this game.
Yeah, I liked it. And, you know, what we saw a lot in the first half, and unfortunately it disappeared in the second half, was Jerry Louis McGee doing some jet sweep and some of this kind of end-around stuff. I mean, Jerry finished, I guess, technically tied as the second leading rusher with 41 yards, but he had a 30-yard dash. Mm-hmm. I like the use of him in that situation just because he's an elusive guy. And it kind of just showed a little bit of, you know, trying to help that offensive line in just another way. Get the ball, you know, in a playmaker's hands and get him outside, let him make some plays.
Yep. I will credit to the offensive coaching staff there because they definitely are recognizing that the traditional run game, it just isn't there for us yet. Maybe it will be. Maybe it won't. Who knows? But they're doing other things to make the run at least a threat, which is necessary.
Yeah.
You kind of called that, Mike, early on, is you thought we would see some more run-pass option.
Yeah.
Giving the team some help, some more dynamism to get the running game going, and Jerry Lou McGee seems to be the answer.
Well, many guys, yeah. Jerry Lou McGee, I think, and there's probably a couple others as they kind of build that in. A couple of receivers could do that. But Jerry's so shifty, and it kind of gets the ball in space to him. So it's one of those things where if you can design the right play, it's going to work. Now, Jerry, it's like if we are concerned about Snead taking hits, we got to be concerned about Jerry taking hits because he's not a big dude.
Yeah.
But, you know, we saw a little bit of that. We saw some run-pass option, which was nice to see. I think that we probably should be seeing more of that. You know, the reality is that Snead's going to be one of our top two rushers every week unless he's hurt, right?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what this team is right now.
Does that make you guys as uncomfortable as it makes me?
100%.
Yeah, but, you know, as we get into the podcast moving forward, Sac State got it done last year. Their quarterback was their leading rusher, too, and they won 7 games. Maybe it'll work, but yeah, he's got to be durable. And I'm not saying Snead isn't, but it's a concern. Your QB takes a big shot, and then what happens?
Then we get to learn who Cam Humphries is.
Yeah.
So after Flowers returns his kick return, we get a field goal from Semenza.
Yep.
Then we're down 10-14.
Yep.
And welcome back Samuel Akim.
Yeah, Sammy Akim, 2 weeks in a row, has stepped up. That, you know, I in the early season, there's two guys who had potential that are really showing it this year. One was just opportunity-wise, and that's Dante Olsen, who had another great game. Mm-hmm. But the other one, Akim, had all kinds of opportunities last year, and he just never really put it together. Something's different about him this year.
You know, and maybe his best catch of the game wasn't either of his touchdowns, but it was, I think, one of the first few drives the Grizz had. I think it was maybe the first drive where they set up a touchdown. And it was a double move with a Snead pump fake. And Akim goes right by the corner, who's fooled, and Snead fires it too high and too hard, you know, over his head. And Sammy goes up.
He got it.
Hits it with a hand and then jumps and catches, you know, pulls it in. It was an amazing catch. It's too bad it wasn't a strike because it would have been another touchdown.
Yeah, it would have been a touchdown. And we did get a field goal on that drive, I'm pretty sure. So it's like one of those takeaways that, oh, man, I bet they watched that on film and really were like, oh, missed opportunity. But Akim last year does not make that catch. No. Not a chance. No. So, I mean, you know, you want to talk about looking for improvements and looking for ways that this coaching staff's getting guys better. And those receivers are so lucky to have Brent Pease as their wide receivers coach. I mean, that's a positive.
Akim is such a phenomenal specimen. I've seen him play basketball at the rec center.
Mm-hmm.
And he's a guy that can throw down dunks with the best of them.
Well, he can probably touch the rim standing up.
Well, that's what I'm saying. This guy can catch footballs above the 10-foot mark.
Oh, yeah. It's interesting.
How many cornerbacks and safeties can get up there and contend?
Especially in the Big Sky. Like, you got to think, as he's showing that he can get more physical, they've got to be kind of drooling about goal line. Because just run to the spot and throw it high, you know, he knows he's going to get hit, and who knows. But that's a big weapon.
Yeah.
So, yeah, by the end of the first quarter, Akim got a touchdown. So 18-14 at the end of the first.
It felt so good to finish that long first quarter with all the scoring. Up 4 after being down 14.
Mm-hmm. So let's stop right there. And it's like, it was a loss, so we got to look for positives. That's a positive. Like,
absolutely.
This is a very young team with some guys who haven't played well together. And for them to give up 14 points and then realize that within the quarter they can overcome that, that's huge.
Absolutely. Yeah, and again, we've talked about this. I don't know if this is something you would see in the last couple of years' teams. And I don't know if it's a mix of the type of players, the type of coaching, or what. I'd say it's probably a blend of everything. I mean, if they can keep building on that, that's a great thing. This isn't the last time they're going to find themselves in a hole like that.
Absolutely. You're right. Second quarter, honestly, blah.
Yeah.
Defense played pretty well, gave up a field goal, went into halftime, Grizz winning 18-17. I want to point out to who's ever listening on eGrizz that is the correct halftime score, 18-17. Lay off.
What was it that they called you to in the?
We should talk about this. We should pause.
There was an eGrizz post about Mike not knowing the halftime score from last week's game.
Yeah, but then they lumped us in with those other guys on the Montana Mint's Big Sky podcast, like we were the same people.
That was insulting.
I know. I am insulted by that. So just to clarify, we are not those guys. We have not interviewed Reese Phillips. Had we interviewed Reese Phillips, we would have asked better questions.
More probing questions. Germaine. You'd have come out just thinking, wow.
Yeah. So three Grizz fans who actually go to games sitting right here doing this podcast. So anyway, back to the Grizz game. So halftime, they're still winning, 18-17. Come out, we get a field goal in the third quarter. So really, the middle of the game was just kind of there. I mean, we shut them down quite a bit, which is great. They kind of shut us down too, honestly.
Yeah, but you look at, you know, defensively for the Grizz in the third quarter, Western Illinois basically threw an interception, 3-and-out, one quick first down, but then had to punt after 5 plays and another 3-and-out, and then getting into the fourth, 6 plays and 7 yards net and had to punt again. So you had 5 basically consecutive possessions where the defense just shut Western Illinois down. And Grizz offense, you know, not only tacks on a field goal, but then gets into the, the early fourth with a touchdown there as well, too. So things are looking good at that point. Up 10.
Yeah, you know, and one thing coming in, you know, we talked about, I think Houck said he thinks this was the best quarterback we've faced so far, and they're right. I don't know that any of the quarterbacks we've faced so far have been the quality of the couple we're going to see next week, UC Davis, etc. But those were, you know, he was a preseason Missouri Valley Football Conference all honorable mention or whatever. So at least he gets some recognition, and they shut him down after that. So credit to them, you know, they made the adjustments.
And really, it wasn't off of his back that the Grizz really lost this game. It wasn't that they had this quarterback that was picking us apart left and right.
No, it was weird. Fluke plays. They obviously saw some stuff on film that they made work. But if you take away a few fluke plays, it's like, man, it's a completely different game. But obviously, they would have been playing a different game as well. So it's tough to say.
Yeah.
Enter the fourth quarter. Akem scores a second touchdown. So the Grizz are up 27-17 at that point, and you're starting to feel like, man, maybe they're going to pull out this win on the road.
We then miss an extra point.
Yeah, and I, you know, Bobby Houck is a special teams coach, and obviously he knows what he's doing. And Semenza hasn't missed a field goal, but he's missed two extra points now, and this was his big Achilles heel 2 years ago. And it feels like whenever Semenza misses an extra point, things start to go south for the team. Like, it's like a mental thing.
Yeah.
Later on in that quarter, you know, the offense stalls out. They punt it to
McShane,
who is their all-conference punt returner, takes it to the house. What was most frustrating about that is the punter probably overkicked the coverage a little bit, but he had it on the sideline. I mean, like, there's no reason that that guy returned it. None.
The coaches have to look at that and just feel like they let one go.
Yeah. I mean, you got to look at that. It's like you, and how many guys he ran through. It's like he must have run through nine of our guys. And it's like, how did we not get him out of bounds?
Yeah. And I think this type of punt formation we're using, it's like a shield punt. And those three in the back are O linemen and D linemen. And they turned into the last line of defense. And you got 300-pound redshirt freshman lineman trying to tackle a 5'8", 180 all-conference running back. And you can imagine how well that went.
It went
into each other. Like, the two O-linemen ran into each other, and the back was gone.
Yeah. So that was a bummer. Then they kick off to us.
But we still have the lead.
Yeah.
At that point, it's 27-24.
Yep. And we need to get a couple first downs and really run the clock out. Snead hits Jerry Lou McGee, first down. Jerry turns to upfield, fumbles the ball. It was just one of those moments like, oh my God, like this is happening.
Yeah. And then their offense just comes right down and chips away. And next thing you know, they're in the end zone and they got the lead.
Yeah, at that point you knew. It's like you, as a fan sitting and watching on TV, you can tell kind of when that momentum has changed. And it had changed.
From what you could see on TV.
Yeah.
From what you could see on TV, they don't have any fans. It's a shame zero people watched that comeback live.
There was no one there. Speaking of things we missed on TV, after the first touchdown, the Grizz came out in the swinging gate, which is when, you know, they line up wide. And if the opposing defense doesn't adjust to it, there's a check. And so O'Donohue, who's one of my favorite players on the team, he's the long snapper, snaps the ball to Reed Miller, who's the holder, and Reed Miller turns. Donohue runs to the end zone, catches a two-point conversion, which is awesome.
Yeah.
We didn't get to see it because the journalism students at Western Illinois University, and that's not a joke, literally it's produced by the journalism students at Western Illinois University, apparently didn't think that watching the extra point was important. Not only did we not see it, they barely talked about it on the broadcast.
I think we thought it was a typo.
Yeah, like, it was like, oh, no,
Grizz,
this is,
Grizz Twitter was pretty savage about the production quality of that broadcast. My favorite tweet came from a guy named Charlie Palmer, who just simply said, more like ESPN minus.
Oh, That's fair. So anyway, Western Illinois marches down. Scores, gets ahead. We get one last drive. Get things going a little bit. But I honestly felt like at that point, the inexperience of the offense really started to shone through.
Yeah.
You know, we put a few things together. Felt like we were maybe going to move the ball a little bit. Then, you know, first down, second down, third down. Get to fourth down. I forget where we were at on the field, but we had plenty of time, like 2+ minutes left, a little over.
Yeah, so we got about to midfield before the sack and then knocked back to about our 40.
Yeah, so that was a sack on third down, which just completely changed it. And then Snead on fourth down, rather than looking to pick up a first down, they like chucked a Hail Mary, which I really don't understand. And maybe he thought that all his underneath options were covered, although on the film it didn't look like that. But that's a tough one. I mean, who knows?
Yeah, actually it was third down too. It wasn't even fourth down.
Oh, yet. When was it third down?
Yeah. Boy. So he was sacked on second down. And I think that second down sack though, that was, again, you talk about the inexperience. Western Illinois.
That was killer.
Four D linemen, three come right through. And that sack, it's a team sack. Three of the D linemen are right on Snead, and you got the whole offensive line just standing up watching it happen. There must have been a big miscommunication there because it didn't look like anybody got blocked.
Yeah, don't like to see that.
No.
That was sort of a tell for me, was this team is so young. We say it every week. They're young. They don't have a ton of experience. I give them a lot of props for having the fortitude and the strength to come back early and retake the lead, but ultimately they got caught sort of.
Yep.
They took one on the chin and didn't really know how to respond, I think.
Yeah, no, I think you're right. And it was like they took one on the chin at the start, got back into it, fumbled it away, and just didn't know what to do and ran out of time. Interestingly enough, it's been a couple days, had some time to cool off. Obviously, right after the game, you just feel sick because it's, boy, they could have had a win. 3-0 in the pre-conference schedule this year would have been huge. Because I think all of us looked at the preseason schedule or the pre-conference schedule and said, yeah, that's probably 2-1. And this is actually, honestly, exactly how I thought it would play out. I thought that Northern Iowa is a better team, but we'll get some emotion with Houck being back. We'll beat that. We'll beat Drake. Figured we'd lose here. So this is exactly what I expected. But man, when you've got a chance to outperform expectations, oh, it just tears you apart. But that being said, you know, give it a day or two, and I think the reality is, and this might be a newsflash to you guys, but this team's probably not going to win a national championship this year, right?
Oh, I don't know. I'm still on the fence. No, I agree.
So, you know, honestly, from a young team, maturity, experiences, what you grow from, I actually think we're probably better off having had this game play out the way it did, where we got behind, battled back, fell behind again, and lost. Because I think they will remember the lessons from this a lot longer. I think if they'd won, you kind of convince yourself that there are no problems. Would you guys agree with that?
Yeah, I would agree with that completely. I mean, and we've seen things like this before. I think even with a Houck coach team, I think 2008, the early group, there was a big road win at Cal Poly. And then I think the next game or the game after, they had to eke out a win with a field goal against Division II Central Washington. And they'd come off a big win, so they kind of had a younger, inexperienced team that was maybe a little bit more full of themselves than they really should be. And then the next week they go on the road to Weber State and they get smoked. But it was the wake-up call that they needed. And yep. So it seemed like the narrow win against maybe a team they should have beat. Well, in that situation, it was a narrow win against a team they should have beat by a lot more. They didn't seem to learn from it too much. But then, you know, getting that wake-up call on the road helped that team.
I mean, for several seasons now, Houck's got this game to point to with these young guys and be like, hey, remember what happened. We were there. We pissed it away. Any team could come back. Nothing, you know, don't take anything for granted. So I think from the standpoint of lessons learned in the long run, it's probably, quote, better. And I'm going to put that in air quotes because you want to win every game. And there's going to be a bunch of fans that are too dense to understand the point I'm making and will say, oh, no, no, win, win, win. You know, and I get that. Yeah, I would like to win. And yeah, this could be a problem if we get, you know, conference is going to be tough. We're going to lose a couple more games. And all of a sudden we're on the playoff bubble. This would have been a nice win to have. But that's all part of the learning process.
It is. It is. And it's, you know, you always look at this with the FCS. It's better to lose early. Than drop some late. So if you're going to take a loss, hopefully this is one. It is a bummer, though, when you could have been 3-0. But hopefully they build on it.
It's always good to, in sort of your after-action report, to look at three sustains and three improves.
Mm-hmm.
One thing that I think we really need to figure out is our inability to get pressure on the quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, it's funny, I think you texted something during the game to the group of us who are in this Madden League right now, and we blitzed 8 and didn't get any pressure.
We kept doing engage 8.
Yeah. Luke was like, I think that's what engage 8 is. And he would just step up in the pocket, and it's like, man, that's clearly going to be a season-long thing, but you'd like to hope that maybe we can pick something up. I don't know.
Well, you know, the interesting thing is, I believe Montana's second in the Big Sky for total sacks so far.
Yeah.
But again, I think maybe what you're talking about might be more consistent pressure, because you get, like, Dante Olsen, I think, has 4 of the 7 team recorded sacks so far, or something like that, 3 or 4. But it's just not a consistent thing. And it's not even pressure or QB hits or something like that. That helped allowed their QB to pick apart this defense to the tune of 360 yards.
Yeah. So, positives. You want to jump to those or you want to keep going?
Let's ping pong back to a positive.
Okay. I think a positive is it was great to see Flowers get that kickoff return to kind of continue to show that we can be a factor in both the punt return and the kickoff returns. Because honestly, with the way our offense is not completely consistent, those are big yards for us to get. Mm-hmm. So to me, that's positive.
Yeah, I like that. You know, and we brought it up earlier, so I won't dwell on it too much, but it felt like in this game, the offensive line in the run game statistically it did have its best showing. We had 150 yards rushing. Now, once again, our QB led by 1 yard over a couple other guys. But I liked that the running game looked a little bit more like something you can actually use.
Elijah Lee, 3 carries, 16 yards. Eastwood, 15 carries, 44. Lou McGee, 3 for 41. Eastwood averaged 2.7 yards a carry. I wanted him to be over 3, so there you go. We didn't win. But so it's positive.
I hate to be the Debbie Downer and bring up another place to improve, but really, your evaluation is an opportunity for growth.
Oh, Lord. You don't ever want Luke to be your boss, I don't think.
So another thing to improve, kind of maybe pushing back a little bit on what you said, Brent, is when it came down to the goal line, we still couldn't get the ball across. 4th and short,
yep.
We kind of got stuffed.
Kind of. We got completely stuffed.
I guess you only get stuffed. There's no kind of stuffed, right?
Yeah, and I mean, it's like, that's again, it's a staple of a Hawk run team where 3rd and 1 or 4th and 1, you need that O-line to win in the trench, get your running back 1 or a little bit more yards, and it didn't happen.
So I've seen some criticism on Hawk and the coaching staff for the play calling on the goal line. It's criticism that I think is legitimate. But also, I think that with a young team like this, where it's still early in the season and you're trying to establish your mentality, I kind of really like that Hauk is saying, God damn it, we're a team that goes for it on 4th and 1, and son of a bitch, we're going to get that yard. And you kind of have to live the things you say.
Yeah.
He just can't be rah-rah in the locker room and on the field and then call some like halfback screen.
Yeah, I liked the call, honestly. And I know some people have criticized that a little bit. And I think Brent probably could make the same argument that we should have taken the points. And maybe that's true, too. I like the call there. I'm a little bit riskier on that front. I don't like the play call, though. And this is one thing that maybe we can talk about a little bit here. But, you know, 3 games in, I mean, I think it's fairly clear that we're not getting the push up the middle that we would like to. And I can't think of a 3rd and 1 or a 4th and 1 that we ran it up the middle and got the first down yet this year. I mean, I'm sure there is one, I think.
Eastwood's long touchdown.
Yeah. Oh, 4th and 1. Yeah. Yep. Good call. So in that situation, I'm thinking like, do an RPO, put your ball, you know, who's your fastest guy in the backfield? It's either Snead or Louis McGee, right?
Louis McGee.
Maybe we come up with some sort of option where Louis McGee runs to Snead's left and, you know, Snead runs around the line, and if he can cut up for a yard, great. If not, he pitches out to Louis McGee. I mean, I know that we're not an option team, and that's not what they want to be long term, but I think that would be a tough thing for teams to prepare for short yardage, especially if you also had Eastwood in the backfield, because it would make them have to guess which way we're going to go. But that's just me.
That is just you.
I'm not a coach.
No, yeah, and I think I tweeted about during the game, I would have taken the points. I know we missed an extra point right before that, so we had 4 points off the board just from that. I don't know. I think when you're on the road with a young team like that, Simmons is perfect on the season so far. You put him out there, you make it a little tougher. Maybe it just gives a little bit of extra confidence, because instead of getting stuffed on the 5 and giving the ball right back, you got a little bit more to speak of. And I know the counter argument, we scored, we held them to a three and out and scored on the
got a short series, field, so. Scored a touchdown.
Yeah. But yeah, so I would have taken the points.
Okay. Positives, two other runs, we've already mentioned them, but Akeem and Olsen continue to impress me. So, you know, individual performances, I like where they're at.
Olsen, an interception, how many tackles?
11 tackles, 1.5 tackles for a loss, and half a sack.
Yeah, what a stud.
So, on the negatives, I don't know what this says about me, but I had a much bigger list of concerns than positives this week.
Really?
Shocking, right? But a couple other things I would just like to get your guys' take on really quick. The O-line, to me, on one hand, we got more of a push in the running game than we have. But I still feel that when Ekmeyer was moved over to center and we had a different combination of guys in, Cole Swain, it felt like that was our best period of offensive line play yet this season. I know that they don't want to play these true freshmen. So like Cole Swain, I don't know that he even played.
I think it was Cy Sermon and someone else who rotated in at guard.
Yep. Yeah. Because it's like freshmen this year can play 4 games and keep the red shirt. But boy, I don't know. I mean, that's a tough call.
Yep. And you know, I mean, unfortunately, the O-line's kind of the punching bag here. But you can look at too, we had two real costly offensive line penalties. One that absolutely took points off the board, where we had late in the second quarter, Dalton Snead throws a prayer to the end zone, and somehow Samori Toure hauls it in at the 2, comes back on a hold.
Beaver.
Yep. And then third quarter, happened again. Grizz got across midfield. Now it's tough to say. You know, they got to the 40, but then we get another offensive line holding. Next thing you know, it's 1st and 20. We punt the ball away. You know, it kills a good opportunity. And I think we had a couple false starts and we had a couple procedures. I think the O-line tallied up its share of penalty yards and unfortunately, you can probably say, took some points off the
negated board. Some big plays.
Yeah.
Couple other interesting quick things to talk about. And we can talk about this a little bit into the preview of next week as well. We took a lot more shots downfield this week than we have, which I understand because I think they wanted to open it up a little bit to try and help the run. And that might have been what did it. I think it's a combination of not a lot of time, getting pressure, but Snead's not quite as accurate downfield as I think we're used to the last couple of years, and that's an adjustment for the receivers. So, something to watch.
I agree. I think, and it's not just downfield, too, but this is a thing we've seen from Snead now, because I think you two talked about it after the UNI game, and we chatted about it a little bit in the Drake game as well, too. There was even some checkdowns or some midfields where it didn't need to be 100 miles per hour and 5 feet over the guy's head. And so there's some times of needed touch that just weren't there. And so for the first time, I think statistically, Snead was, 24 for 41 passing? Yeah, it was the
first time he was under 60%. Yeah. Still good. I mean, well over 50. Good.
And again, so you talk about he stretched the field more. So more deep shots, a lower percentage pass, you know. Yeah. But still, you had quite a few where it was open targets in the zone, and it was not a catchable one.
Are you guys seeing anything mechanically that he can improve on? Or can you really improve something like accuracy, or is it just like...
I would imagine that to a certain extent you can improve accuracy, but probably the farther downfield you're throwing it, the harder that becomes. I mean, there's a timing element with the receivers, and I think that comes with playing time, so... Snead's definitely a talented quarterback. Oh, he's definitely got traits. I mean, he wasn't recruited to the FBS level for nothing.
Right.
I think we're seeing a little bit that he definitely is a running quarterback who can throw, not a throwing quarterback who can run. And that's not a knock. That's just the observation of what his game is. Mm-hmm. And it'll be interesting to see how the coaches continue to adjust to his strengths and how defenses, as they get game film on him, adjust to take away his strengths and make him force into his weaknesses.
I feel like there were stretches in this game where it genuinely felt like they were playing it to its best ability.
Yep.
Even more than probably you saw in the first half of the Northern Iowa game. So there was a lot of stuff that you liked, but there was also a lot of stuff where it's just like, oh boy.
Don't love that.
It was rough.
But, I mean, I think that's pretty normal. New coach, new coaching staff, new kids playing together. Not a knock on Snead at all. Just
no, yeah, definitely not knocking the guy. It's just three games in. I mean, he's adapting to what he's got for offensive line and things like that. Because that's these guys when they do their spring ball, can't hit the QB. Summer workouts, it's 7-on-7. You know, get back to fall camp, it's a little bit alive, but again, you're not working with what the pressure that's going to be presented to you through the season. So you can tell he's adapting, and hopefully it continues to improve.
Yeah. It is kind of a bummer that the strengths of the position groups on the offense don't complement each other. Like, the strengths of our wide receivers, those guys are built for vertical. I mean, they can do all the short stuff and, you know, run the fly sweep, yada, 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 do all that. But, I mean, they're built to be guys that can go catch the ball down the field. And, you know, the combination of our O-line's just young, and we're not getting a great pocket time. And maybe Snead doesn't go through to his third read like some coaches might like him to as well. I think that's a combination that's just kind of a bummer. But I bet it gets better as the year goes on.
I would think so.
All right, I think that wraps up our Grizz coverage. Moving on, let's review what happened in the Big Sky this week.
Well, what happened in the Big Sky is you weren't perfect this week because we all know that was a fluke. So just put that out there.
Fair.
All right. Stanford beat UC Davis. Neither one of us is shocked. We both picked that.
It was closer than I thought, though.
UC Davis scares the hell out of me.
It was 30-10.
You know, on another note, we should talk about this because they're not in the Big Sky anymore, but North Dakota went on the road and upset Sam Houston State.
Number five
on the road. Do you know where we go in a couple weeks? North Dakota. So we'll talk about that more. Northern Arizona, Missouri State. Luke, you picked NAU. I picked Missouri State. Missouri State cleaned house. Case Cookus was out for that game, though, so that's kind of a bummer. That's the one knock on him. He just can't stay healthy. Or, you know, get ejected for targeting.
He gets kicked out of games.
Yeah. Whatever. Wagner, Montana State. Wagner actually at times gave him a little bit more of a game than I would have thought, but Montana State did exactly what they should have done against Wagner, who is worse than Drake. Let's just put that out there.
I do have to say, I don't follow Hot Take Nate on Twitter.
That's a good call.
I did pull up his account in the first half of that game, and it was a very entertaining read because he was very exhausted and very nervous. I think it was 30-21 at the half, and it was looking a little dicey.
He also was drunk by the end of the first quarter.
Which is what you have to be a Cat fan. You
know, yeah.
Our boy Troy Anderson did not play at quarterback again this week. Their guy Rovig started a second week in a row. Looked really good against Wagner. So now we get a week plus of these Cat fans who clearly overreact to everything on a level that not even Grizz fans can claim. Projecting that he's like going to be the next great quarterback in the conference.
I told you, it's this abusive relationship dynamic. It's like, oh yeah, but he told me I look pretty, so he's like the best guy ever.
Oh boy,
he's still an asshole, and he's going to let you down.
So you get out of that relationship is what you're saying.
Yeah,
and if you can't get out yourself, come find help. We'll tweet out a number or something. I don't want to make a joke about bad relationships.
No.
Montana, Western Illinois, we both got that one wrong.
I kind of got that one right.
You know,
but I hedged it because I'm too chicken shit to like actually pick
you,
a score.
You got it right on the pod, but then in your Egriz preview, you kind of...
Yeah, I can't let my minions down on Egriz.
So, since Brent's joining us mid-season, we're just going to let him do commentary on the picks because we don't want to... It's too late to see how he does versus us for the season, but we'll get his thoughts on the big ones. Sac State, Northern Colorado. This was close, but Sac State won.
Yeah, we'll talk a little bit more about that game.
Yep. Portland State, hey, first win in 2 years, beat the College of Idaho. I think they're the Yotes. I think I was calling them the Spuds last week, but I think they're the Yotes.
Yeah,
the Yotes.
Yep. Idaho State at California. Cal won.
Cal took care of business.
I will say that Idaho State scored like 23 points, so good for them.
Idaho State beat like an FBS team last year. And that was like one of their two wins.
I know, I'm just pointing it out.
But it was Nevada.
So Eastern Washington, Washington State, it seems like either the current Eastern coach doesn't have the FBS magic or Lynch has things rolling at Washington State. But Washington State took care of business. South Dakota, Weber. I picked South Dakota. You picked Weber. You were correct. Weber won handily. Not a whole lot of offense in that game. So there's a plus for us down the road. Southern Utah, Arizona. Arizona won. We both picked Arizona. So we both went 8-2 for the week. We're both 26-7 for the season.
Cal Poly Brown.
Cal Poly Brown, yeah. I don't know how I don't have that on my list, but Brown lost to Cal Poly.
44-15.
Yeah.
How many bazillion rushing yards did Poly have in that game?
Joe Prothro was the Big Sky Conference Offensive Player of the Week. And he cracked over 200 yards.
Say, wasn't it like 230 something?
As a fullback.
Yeah, that guy's not a fullback.
The Mike Allstott of the Big Sky Conference.
Oh, I love that guy.
That's yeah, it. I was going to say, you're going to score some points.
He's responsible for those cowboy collars throughout my high school career.
Lord. So we both went 9-2, and we're 27-7 for the season.
So we're neck and neck.
Neck and neck. We'll pick the rest of the Big Sky a little bit later in the show.
All right, now for the segment where Mike answers quick questions fast. I'm calling this the check down because you got to make some fast decisions here, Mike.
Yep.
Are you ready?
No. This is going to be terrible. It always is.
If this Grizz season was an entree, what would it be?
Oh, God. Chicken primavera because it's good, but it's always a little bit disappointing.
What disappoints you about chicken primavera?
It's not steak.
Fair enough. All right. Best hat for college coaches. Visor, baseball cap, beanie.
You know, I like the baseball cap. I do not like the visor. I'm firmly anti-visor.
If you see something, do you say something?
Yes.
What's your take on fixed-rate mortgages?
They're much better than adjustable-rate mortgages with balloon payments.
Is the offensive line the scapegoat for this season?
I think the offensive line is the easy target on a team that has several weaknesses.
Is momentum a real thing in sports?
It clearly is a real thing in sports.
Clearly?
Clearly. Did you watch the game this weekend?
Who finishes the season at quarterback for the Grizz?
Cam Humphreys.
Does Sam Darnold look like a Lego man?
Yes. Have you guys seen that? Oh my God. Have you guys seen that meme with Sam Darnold and Josh McCown? And they both like flick their hair back with the California surfer dude thing at the same time. Those two, it's like, they could be related.
Well, thanks, Mike. You did such a good job.
That was wonderful. I want the Lego movie to sponsor us now, because those guys could be Lego movie characters.
Okay, well, how about we hop into Sac State now?
Sounds good. Works for me.
Okay.
So last week, Sac State, they beat Northern Colorado 28-25. And they outscored Northern Colorado 21-11 in the second half.
Okay.
So they came back to win.
I'm surprised it was that close.
Yeah, it surprised me a bit too. But, I mean, if you look at it too, Sac, they were down 17-14. They rattle off 14 points. They get the lead. Northern Colorado makes it a little closer with a minute and a half to go in the game. So did have to rally back and get the lead. So you can't discount that. But to be like, they beat them by three in a super tight, close game. It was maybe a little bit of a jump time touchdown right at the end to tighten it up a touch. But still, Northern Colorado passed for 320 yards. And Sacramento last year statistically had one of the better pass defenses.
Which Sacramento has the best safety in the league, I think.
And the best defensive end.
Right?
Yeah, their safety, Emmanuel Anderson. And they also have another senior in the secondary, Mr. Harriel.
Mr. Harrell, so I wrote down, it's an interesting name, am I saying that right? Who cares?
Yeah.
And then their DN, George Obina. I mean, they've got some legitimate first-team Big Sky players on that team.
The history of Sac State has been pretty middling. I mean, they were 4-4 for a couple of years before going 1-7 in conference, then 2-6, and then last year, Jody Sears, Brent was telling us before the podcast,
yeah,
the Big Sky Conference Coach of the Year last year, takes him to 6-2.
Yeah.
7-4 overall. 6-2 in conference, 7-4 overall. Yeah.
If that seventh win hadn't been against a D2 team, they probably would have made the playoffs.
Yeah, they were pretty hot right at the end of the season. And yeah.
So we should take these guys seriously?
We definitely should. So Jody Sears used to coach at Weber, got fired there, but has been at Sac State, I think this is his fourth year. And I was listening to Coulter a little bit on the radio today, and they talked about how basically he came in and he said, we're just going to recruit the best athletes and let them play. So a lot of these guys, not only are they these all-conference selections, but they've got a lot of playing time under their belts.
Speaking of their coaching staff, do you know who their cornerback coach is?
We swapped cornerback coaches this year.
They got J.B. Hall.
Yeah.
That's right. That's right.
They have J.B. Hall. And a lot of credit to how good their corners are goes to Cox, who's been tutoring them for the last few years. But interesting. You know who else is on their staff?
Paul Wolfe.
Paul Wolfe.
Who, tell me more about Paul.
Well, Paul Wolfe was, in my mind, he started the dynasty at Eastern. I know people give credit to Mike Kramer, but Mike Kramer was a hot mess of a coach who could, like, overachieve. Paul Wolfe was the guy who came in after him and was like, yeah, we've got the foundation here, but somebody who actually is competent needs to put these pieces together. And so that was Paul Wolfe, and then he went and coached at Washington State for a few years and didn't do very well, but probably got scapegoated, so he's gone. He bounced around a little bit, was on the Niners staff for a year.
He went to the Super Bowl with the Niners.
Yeah, how about that?
I still have flashbacks.
Luke and I are 49ers fans, and that's rough.
Well, we could take a little side note, and you could ask why I limped today. And it was because I hurt my foot kicking something after the Clay Matthews roughing the passer call. And I actually, like, damaged a tendon in my foot. And so I'm airing my this, but so. But Packers do play the Niners in a couple weeks. So
yeah, that'll be interesting.
We might have to put a bet on that.
So Brent is, like, the ultimate college football fan because he won't be hard on the guys. Like, he'll be observant. He'll make good things. But he's like, they're just kids playing football. Once they get to the pros,
oh,
fuck him. Yeah. He could care less.
If you draw a check, it's on.
Yeah. Brent is very critical of the Green Bay Packers.
So I'm probably, like, too rational as a college fan, and I am just, like, your most irrational Twitter idiot when it comes to anything NFL related. I'm a horrible person on Sunday.
Talk to me about that Clay Matthews play.
Clay Matthews had a wonderful hit on a quarterback who still had the ball in his hands and was flagged for a pass or not for roughing the passer because he kind of touched his leg or something, and it negated a game-winning interception, and it wound up turning the damn game into a tie. So
yeah, two ties in a row, 2 weeks in a row. What's interesting is live Dean Blandino, who works for Fox now, used to be the NFL officiating head. Said that was a wrong call. But then the NFL today came out and was like, not only is this the correct call, but we're going to send it to teams. And it's like, I watched it, and I probably am a little bit pro QB, you know, QB protected. And I was like, what did they call?
It's terrible. Terrible.
Anyway, side note.
Yeah, so, see, yeah.
So back to Sac State.
How we got there, I don't know.
What do you think we can expect from them? Are they primarily a running team? Do they air it out a little more?
So what's interesting is there's a whole lot of unique connections. But their quarterback is a guy named Kevin Thompson. Mm-hmm. And you know where Kevin Thompson started his college career at?
I don't.
UNLV.
Oh.
You know who he played for?
Mr. Bobby Houck.
Bobby Houck and Tim Rosenbaum.
Okay.
Yeah. You know who got a chance to play because he transferred?
Dalton Steed.
I mean, there's all these weird connections there, which makes me think that Dalton Steed's redshirt year at UNLV, Thompson must have still been there.
Yeah, I think so.
Because this past year, I think, was his first year in the Big Sky, or maybe
last year when Sac was,
But
I think he came in really late last year, Sac, yeah.
I think Coulter would say that the reason Thompson's at Sac State is because the relationship that a couple of the Grizz or the UNLV coaches had with Jody Sears. Because Tim Rosenbaum and Jody Sears are, like, good friends. The last time Rosenbaum was here, he left us to go coach at Weber State, spent 20 minutes there, and then got hired by UNLV. But there's a connection there.
Yep.
So if Thompson comes and tears us apart, those guys, no one to blame but themselves. They should have seen this future possibility.
I think the interesting thing when you look at Thompson, too, you're looking at statistically the mirror image of Dalton Snead. He's a dual threat. He's a runner. Unlike us, Sac has Elijah Dotson, who's a better runner for them this year. Last year, though, Thompson was their leading rusher, and he only started 4 games. Sac had a bad string of injuries. Yeah. And so Thompson, I think, finished the season out for them on their kind of hot streak.
Yep.
And so this year, Thompson's
not having the rushing type of season. I mean, last year he had 8 rushing TDs, and like the next guy behind him had 2. And so this year they're spreading it out a little bit better, but this guy, you're going to have, you know the Spider-Man meme where cartoon Spider-Man's pointing at the other cartoon Spider-Man? This is Dalton Sneed pointing at Thompson. Like, these guys are like the same guy. They do a lot of the same stuff.
Well, I would say from an evaluation of Sneed standpoint that's a compliment. If Sneed can turn into Thompson, we'll take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Hell yeah.
I think this is going to be the biggest challenge for Sneed.
On defense.
Absolutely.
Yeah. It's interesting because the defensive challenges seem to be getting more so every week. But, I mean, they've got some good guys. Now, credit to – I will say one thing about our offensive line. Like, 2 of the 3 weeks we've played all conference Missouri Valley DNs. Mm-hmm. And they've shut them down. Like, yeah, he's been under constant pressure. But they – I will say the O-line is slightly better at pass protect than I expected. I'm not saying they're perfect by any stretch, but credit to them on that front.
Well, and so when you look at that with Sacramento, you've got number 57, which is Chambers, and I did not check his sack total from last season. He might have led the league. I'm not sure. I'd have to double check it. But he leads the league this year so far, 4.5 sacks. The guy that's right behind him is Dante Olsen.
Okay.
And this guy, he's a one-man wrecking crew. And so you had that Grizz game where what we saw at some point is in the third quarter, Conlon Beaver goes out. Mm-hmm. And so Peyton Stoner, who returned to the team 2 weeks before the season started, is the left tackle. And this guy's got to be quite excited for this opportunity, depending on who our tackles are, what he's going to have. Because this guy is going to be a force on Saturday.
I don't even know. I mean, we just have to watch. I don't even know what to think there.
Yeah, oof.
So they've got some talent. We've talked about it on the offense and the defensive sides. I'll be curious kind of to see how our team responds. Like, one of the things, and it's hard to compare, like, our expectations of Bobby Houck the last time as a whole look at his tenure with this first season. Because it's like, I don't think it's fair to say, like, the hallmark of a Bobby Houck team is coming back after a loss, correcting it all, kicking the crap out of someone, because it's like these guys have been with Houck for 20 minutes, right?
Mm-hmm.
What's interesting is our buddy Mike, who's a Grizz fan in California and also a big Raiders fan, so he's still nursing that Khalil Mack thing.
Poor guy.
As a Packers fan, so am I.
Because now you have to play him twice a year.
Ugh.
Yeah, John Gruden, that's a whole different conversation.
Oh my God.
Anyway, but he just sent me something on Twitter a little while ago, and Keenan Curran retweeted I think one of the captains of the Nebraska football team, talking about new coach, you have to buy in. If you're not buying in, basically get out of the way. And Keenan Curran retweeted that and just put hashtag truth. You know, Keenan's been an interesting one to watch during all this, because I feel like he is someone that you buy into what the leaders say. You know, you there's going to be good at the end of it. If he's saying that, it makes you wonder if, like, that's a message to guys who are still on the team or guys who left, or how you read into that. But, I mean, it's like he clearly thought about it.
I know you're the king of subtweeting people, but I think Keenan Curran is just saying this is the mentality of this football team. He's a leader. He believes it. It trickles down. I think that's what's going on, and that kind of, like, fires me up. That gets me excited.
I'm excited for it. You don't need to be such an asshole about me subtweeting. You know, if I subtweet you deserve it.
Now, if you ask Coulter, though, 9 out of 10 subtweets from football players are usually about a girl.
So it's the big media lesson.
You might be completely wrong, yeah.
Don't read too far into this. But what I will say is, if Keenan tweeted a video of the Nebraska football captain talking about the team not buying into the new coach and added hashtag truth, and that's about a girl, that's a real interesting relationship there.
We're going to get a sub-following of people just interested in our relationship psychology. Similarly, like our buddy Mike, the Raiders fan, who's hate watching the Bears right now, don't do it, dude. It's like checking up on your old girlfriend on Facebook and how's she doing? Like, oh, it's...
Don't care.
It's damaging.
Yep. It doesn't feel good.
I will say, since we're confessing things now, I've looked up Gresh Jensen's stats every week. So.
We need to talk about this, Mike. How's Gresh doing?
Last week, he had an awesome game. Threw for over 400 yards, a bunch of touchdowns, and also led his team in rushing with 42 yards. So this whole idea that he wasn't mobile. This week, he must really... I really would want to know what's going through his head, because this week his team beat another California junior college, like 82-0.
Whoa.
And they must have gotten up so quickly that he completed 4 of 7 passes for a touchdown interception, and that's his stat line.
But you see this with these JUCO kids. They don't start him every game.
No, 5 quarterbacks on his team took snaps this week. Wow. So, anyway, side note, we're not talking about Jensen. He's not a Grizz player. He's not here anymore.
Mike just shed a tear.
2 of them. It's all fine.
Okay, Mike, so what are you going to look for stat-wise from the Grizz that will project to victory?
I am going to stick with my, if whoever, whatever running back gets the most carries, averages over 3.5, I'll say this week, yards per carry, we're going to win.
So you're saying us versus them, or... Yep. Because they have 2 guys that average over 5.
No, I'm talking about us. Like, okay. Our... Yeah. Like, last week I said if Eastwood averaged over 3 yards a carry, that's going to be a sign that we were getting enough of a running game.
The problem with that is the use of the average. It's the mean is susceptible to outliers. If he rips off a 60-yarder, that's great. But I am going to look for the median rush of 3.5 yards or more, that means we win.
Oh, boy. If the median rush is 3.5 yards, he's going to average like 7 yards a carry.
Yeah, that's great. Brent?
Yes. I will go the opposite way. We need to pass the ball. If a shitty Northern Colorado can pass for over 300 on this pass defense that was great last year, has some studs in it still, but apparently is just trying to retool. That's where our bread and butter is. Yes, we have to run. Yes, we have to have some clock and ball control, but you guys know too, our points are coming through the air. Our ability to move the ball and win this game is through the air. We need to, I mean, Snead's probably going to have to throw 40-plus. Again. Okay. But he's probably going to have to complete more than 24 and have 3 to 4 touchdowns instead of just a couple and a couple picks. It's got to be a more efficient pass game.
I think to piggyback on that, I think we need a receiver other than Jerry Lou McGee to be over 100 yards receiving this week. Because Jerry, that's a combination run game and passing game, so I think it's a little bit different. If one of the other guys gets over 100, it means that we're getting a downfield passing game.
I mean, I guess that he had a decent game, but this last game, I mean, he kind of disappeared. But one guy that we need to have step up is Toure. And it's not that I'm not knocking the guy that he's not stepping, but like Toure was quiet last week. And he had pretty good first opening games, but that's kind of the guy, I think. I mean, Akem is the big possession guy. Jerry's kind of your elusive middle of the field, make plays all over. This week,
Keenan's kind of the all man.
But Toure, he needs to be rolling this week.
What's interesting is I think that 2 games back to back with Akem being a real big part of it is going to help Toure, because Toure is probably getting the number one corner of the opponents in my mind.
This isn't a statistical key, but I'm really looking for our special teams to clean up mistakes. We've had 2 weeks in a row where we've had problems there. I really think that was the difference between a win and loss last week.
Yep.
So solidifying the special teams is critical to us securing a win.
Yep. And I mean, it's interesting because going into the season, here we are with so many, but those offensive line penalties that Brent was talking about, I mean, every one of those killed a positive play for us, it seemed. And you can even cut that in half. Man.
Win the game. You win the game.
Those are tall tasks, but I mean, I'm sure those are every one of those points are one that the coach is hammering on. So.
All right. Moving to the Big Sky. Let's start with Cal Poly going to Cheney to take on Eastern Washington. Mike, who do you got here?
I have Eastern. Eastern has never seemed to be as bothered by Cal Poly's freaking option game as we are, so I've got Eastern.
Yeah, I think it's at Cheney. I fucking hate that place.
Oh.
I think Eastern wins this one. Brent?
Yeah, I would say the same.
Have you ever gone to a game at Eastern and they won?
Yes, but not on that shitty red field. Have we won there with Phil?
I don't think we have. I've been to Eastern like 4 times and I'm 0-4. Luke was there with the last one with me.
So I was at a few wins at, what was this, Joe Albee Stadium in Spokane when they played there. And then I was at the inaugural game on the red field where they lost. But I will say the first touchdown scored on that field was a pick six by Tremaine Johnson. So that's
was that inaugural year Delaney's first year after Flood got fired? It was
Flew's first year.
And it was Flew's first
2010.
Year?
2010. Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah.
Because I went to Delaney's first game at Eastern. And it was Johnson was suspended, and we were playing McKinney at QB, and we dominated. And then they freaking recovered an onside kick.
Yeah.
I mean, it was like, oh my God, how does this happen? Nightmares. Anyway, not relevant.
Moving on then. The Idaho Vandals go to UC Davis.
I'm going to take UC Davis.
Man, I have bought a lot of Idaho stock this year. But I don't think I didn't have Idaho.
Oh, you guys are hearing it now. Luke is starting to crack a little on Idaho.
This is maintaining true to my preseason rankings. I have UC Davis above Idaho. UC Davis is going to take care of this at home.
If Idaho wins this game, Luke is going to pick Idaho every week for the rest of the year.
Is Idaho the Bitcoin of Big Sky? Like it is just falling apart. Your eyes lit up. You like that?
That could be.
But they would have had to have been high to begin with. I think they are way.
They were. Ranked. They started. What were they ranked? They so. All right. So this is the funny thing. So when I was coming here, Craig Haley, who does he write for?
Stats.
He's like the FCS. Premier FCS guy. So he released his top 25. He put Montana 18th. An Idaho fan tweeted at him and he said, "Where the hell is Idaho?" And Haley retweets him and he says, "Just east of Oregon." One and two, Idaho. They're not going to be the top 25.
And their only win is against, like, who did they play? Some, like, Western
New Mexico, State? Yeah, I don't know.
Whatever. What's next?
Northern Colorado goes to Ogden to play Weber State.
I'm going to pick Weber.
Weber.
Smart.
Easy enough.
Yeah.
Montana State on the road to Portland for Portland State.
I want Portland State to win so badly, but I'm going to... Oh, man. That's a tough game to call because MSU's so inconsistent on offense that they probably think that they've got this passing game going now. Brent, what do you think?
I think the Cats are going to win it because... you guys know me. I look at a lot of stats and figures and all this thing, but it is a statistical anomaly. The Bobcats are the luckiest fucking team in the conference, and they'll have these games. Like I'll bet early fourth quarter, Portland will be up 10 to 17 points,
mm-hmm.
and they will lose the game.
Interesting. I think the Cats are going to win.
Montana State is the irrational confidence guy.
Yeah,
just a lot of swagger, and you're like, why? That said, I'm going to take Portland State.
Oh, I love it. Nice. Luke, I hope you get this right.
I just, now Portland State has a couple games on Rovig. I think that if he was any good, he probably would have won the starting job to begin with. I don't think he's any good.
I think that's a fair observation.
I think he's got some blemishes, and when the lights come on at Stocks, he's not as pretty as you think.
Boy, I don't know where to go with that.
Then we have Idaho State going to Grand Forks to take on North Dakota.
North Dakota. All right.
Yeah.
And then Southern Utah hits up Northern Arizona.
That's Northern Arizona at home. Southern Utah's really struggled. I'm going to take NAU in that game. What say you?
Man, I don't know if Case Cookus is going to play. That's the thing about NAU. Without Case Cookus, I think Southern Utah clearly wins. Do we know if he's going to be back?
I don't.
No clue.
I'm going to take Southern Utah.
For both these teams, this might be a must-win game.
It is for Southern Utah. They're 0-3. They're 0-4.
And NAU's 1-2.
Yeah, but NAU...
With a conference loss already to Eastern.
But that was non-conference.
Non-conference. Yeah. Okay, good catch. Did not know that. Yeah. Okay, but still, I mean... So you look at, I mean, if Southern Utah wins, then both teams are sitting at 1-3. You're in a hole.
Yeah, you definitely are.
Yeah.
All right. And now for the final game, Sac State in Missoula against the Grizz.
The rational kind of like historical Grizz fan taking everything into account says the Grizz are going to win this game. The observer of the Big Sky this year and the kind of realist on, we probably have overly high expectations for year one of Bobby Houck, makes me kind of feel like this might be the year Sac State gets a win at Washington Grizzly Stadium. I'm going to go with the Grizz. I'm going with the Grizz.
I think that the Grizz are going to win this game too. The Sac State had to come from behind to beat Northern Colorado. They gave up a shit ton of yards through the air. We all know we get a little bump playing at home.
Yep.
And we're wearing copper.
Dave Dickinson's
at the game. It's going to be crazy. I think momentum is real. There will be a wave of emotion.
You heard it there.
I didn't believe it when you said it, but when Brent says it, I am a little more convinced.
Scott Guernsey might not get this deep into the pod, but if he did, he would put it on the radio show this week. And I think you look at, there's like a lot of things, and maybe it's just dumb. Like they're wearing the throwback jerseys, and it's going to be a great day. I think you're going to have kind of a nostalgic throwback kind of day. And I don't think it's going to be a blowout. I don't think this is a crappy Sac State team that we have seen in years past. I can see this being like a 31-28, 27-21, like a tight type of game, a one-score win for the Grizz. Yeah, I feel like Grizz will win, but I feel like it's not going to be the prettiest, and it's going to be one of those ones where I think you're more like Mike, like you, like us, like you're more research-based guy fans are going to be happy with it. And I think you're kind of, you're less research-connected Grizz fans might just come away and be like, oh, this is Sac State. We should have blown them out, blown them off the field. This is terrible. And so it'll be an interesting reaction, because I think if you get like a 30-28 Grizz win, and we're just happy we got out with a win, you're going to have a big chunk of this fan base that's going to be like, it's Sac State. We should have beat him by 40.
What's interesting, though, is isn't that really the defining characteristic of Bobby Houck 1.0? I mean, like, if you think back to year 7 last year when we were on a freaking run to the national championship game, there were people that were, like, ready to get him out of town because we didn't, win convincingly enough. And we didn't, I mean, that's Bobby Houck.
He's the football enemy of the spread, right? Whatever the point spread is, he's gonna be under, correct?
Yeah, pick the Grizz to win outright, but not cover.
But now here's the thing. So Bobby Houck, 2003, we had an early embarrassing loss to North Dakota State, rattled off 4 wins after that. 2004.
Hindsight, I'm not as embarrassed by that loss to North Dakota State, but anyway.
They were Division II then.
They were still pretty good.
They faked a field goal and the whole stadium knew they were faking it, except for apparently,
Bobby Houck,
the head coach. 2004, we go on the road to Sam Houston State. Early, they put it to us. Rattle off 5 wins in a row after that. 2008, Weber beats us on the road. And the next loss is a national championship game. Bobby Houck traditionally has had teams that rebound from a loss. They're usually not the most convincing wins after a loss, but it puts you back on the right track.
What's interesting, and this says a little bit about the way FCS football works, but both of those tough early losses you mentioned were on the road at Weber at Sam Houston State, and we were able to get them at home in the playoffs and beat both of them.
That's true. That's very true. Yeah, there was also 2005. It was a home game. We lost to Eastern Washington and rattled off 4 more wins after that. So he's tended to show this trait in his teams, young or experienced, where he can rebound from a loss.
So I think what Britt just called is that Western Illinois is going to come here noon Saturday after Thanksgiving for a first-round playoff game. Is that basically what you just said?
They better. The next day I fly my family to Disney, high off of Western Illinois first-round playoff
win. There you go. Called it right there. Don't even need to play the season.
I like it.
Anything else we need to know about? I can't think of anything. It's going to be a great game. Dave Dickinson celebration. They're celebrating him making the College Football Hall of Fame, which when you step back and think about it, it's kind of a big deal.
Absolutely.
I mean,
Great Falls, Montana kid. You
know, yeah, that'll be a lot of fun. Dave Dickinson is like my, not my first memories of Grizzly football, but my first like fully understanding memories of Grizzly football are when he was playing.
So my like coming of age of Grizzly football was watching Dave Dickinson. So 1993, I was 13 years old. Mm-hmm. I was working as a score runner in the press box. And so, you know, it's 93, right? So they relayed scores with phone calls. And my job was, they would, Chris Walterskirchen, who passed away a couple, last year, I believe, yeah, worked for the Missoulian Forever, would, we'd write the scores down. He'd, the phone would ring, he'd pick up the phone, and it'd be someone, they'd be like, okay, what's the score in Idaho? All right, it's 14-7, and we'd write it down, and we'd write down a handful of scores, and then I would take this note, and I would take it down to the PA announcer. I don't think it was Peter Christian, then. I can't remember who it was. I would then take it to Bill Moose, the athletic director. Side note, dated his daughter for 2 months because of it. I would then take it to the radio guys. And then at halftime, I would get a compiled stats, and I got a sideline pass, and I'd walk up the tunnel, and I'd hand the stats to a student assistant, and then I'd walk back up, and I got pizza. It was the best job. So
it clearly left an impression on you.
So 1993, you know, Burt Wilberger was starting QB, goes down with an injury. Dave Dickinson leads an amazing comeback against South Dakota State. And, like, that is what is still Grizzly football in me. And then 93, you know, Dave, we had a rough playoff loss. 94, he was incredible but hurt his ankle and, you know, ended there. And then 95, on to the national championship. So I have a game ticket with his autograph on it. I mean, he is the guy, and that is the team that got me, like, fully invested into Grizzly football. I'm super excited for this weekend just for what he represents to me as a Grizz fan.
In the Grizz football edition of The Sandlot, Dave Dickinson is the ghost of Babe Ruth that comes to visit the kid in the room.
You are spot on.
Right?
You are spot on.
What's the saying at the end? Like, don't forget, kid. Like, heroes get remembered, but legends never die. And, like,
Legends of the Fall. That even works. That was his nickname.
What's his nickname? Yes. Was. Yeah.
Man, that is perfect. So anyway, this weekend, great game. Should be a great, fun atmosphere. Throwback uniforms, copper and gold. Bring your old copper blankets. The only bummer is it's not a surprise, but that's all right.
It's a 1 p.m. kickoff, so if you're coming from the eastern part of the state, you have time to stay at the Hotel Finland, wake up, and drive to Missoula.
You know, I'm going to have to talk to you about how capitalism works. They did not pay for two ads. They paid for one ad. But anyway, stay at the Hotel Finland. That's FINLEN.com.
All right. And with that, I think it's a wrap.
I think we're good. We'll see you next week, unless we know you, in which case we'll talk to you sooner than that.
Go Grizz.
Fight on.